At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Tracy Wise, Senior Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning. Thank you all for joining us for Brookfield Infrastructure Partners' first quarter 2014 earnings conference call. On the call today is Bahir Manios, our Chief Financial Officer, who will discuss our financial results and review our operational highlights, and Chief Executive Officer Sam Pollock, who will provide comments on our acquisitions update, our view of emerging markets, and provide an outlook for our business. Following their remarks, we look forward to taking your questions and comments. At this time, I would like to remind you that in responding to questions and in talking about our growth initiatives and our financial and operating performance, we may make forward-looking statements. These statements are subject to known and unknown risks, and future results may differ materially. For further information on known risk factors, I would encourage you to review our annual report on Form 20-F, which is available on our website. With that, I would like to turn the call over to Bahir Manios. Bahir?
Thanks, Tracy, and good morning, everyone. In my remarks, I'll focus on funds from operations, or FFO, which is a proxy for cash that we generate in our business. We're very pleased with the fact that we started the year off with strong first quarter financial results. We reported FFO of $186 million, or 89 cents per unit, which were up 16% and 11% respectively compared to the prior year. Our results reflect steady improvements in each one of our operating segments and the deployment of capital in organic growth initiatives and new businesses. During the quarter, we increased our distributions to unit holders by 12%, and based on our results to date, we're on track to achieve a payout ratio of 60%, which is at the lower end of our long-term payout target. Our utilities business generated FFO of $89 million in the period, compared to $92 million in the first quarter of 2013. The lower results in this segment reflect the impact of the sale of our Australasian distribution operations in the fourth quarter of 2013. On a same-store basis, underlying performance was strong, as FFO increased by $6 million or 7%, as our businesses benefited from inflation indexation and the commissioning of certain capital projects into our regulated rate base. Our transport business generated FFO of $95 million in the first quarter of 2014, compared to $67 million in the prior year period. The significant increase in FFO was driven by the full contribution from our Australian Railroads Expansion Program, where the final portion was commissioned in March 2013. In addition, higher volumes associated with a bumper grain harvest and a higher contribution from our toll road business, where we doubled our ownership interest in the Brazilian roads in September 2013, also contributed to these positive results. Our energy business generated FFO of $26 million in the first quarter of 2014, compared to $22 million in the prior year period. Results in this segment were aided by improved performance at our North American natural gas transmission business. During the quarter, this business experienced increased natural gas volumes into the Chicago market and higher revenues from profit-sharing agreements with customers that were tied to improvements in basis spreads. Higher spreads were primarily driven by natural gas price volatility caused by an unusually long and cold winter. Our UK energy distribution operations also recorded higher FFO compared to the prior year as a result of higher tariffs as well as lower costs associated with the margin improvement program that we've been implementing over the past year. On the financing front, we completed two very successful financings in the US private placement market during the quarter. First, our UK regulated distribution business completed a $165 million financing comprised of notes that received a Baa2 rating from Moody's. This financing is expected to close in June and will have a 15-year maturity at a weighted average swapped coupon of 4.5%. The proceeds will be used to repay existing revolving bank facilities, which have been drawn to fund recent growth-related capital expenditures. Also, our Australian Railroad completed a $485 million long-term financing, whose proceeds will be used to repay shorter duration bank debt. This financing, which is expected to close in the third quarter of the year, has been swapped into Australian dollars at an average rate of 6% and has a weighted average maturity of almost 10 years. The notes have been rated BBB stable by Standard & Poor's and will extend the asset's average maturity profile. We also remain committed in positioning our company for further growth by advancing a number of investment initiatives, putting to work the significant liquidity we have in place today. During the quarter, we made some good progress on both the organic growth and acquisitions fronts. I'll provide a quick update on some of the organic growth initiatives that we have on the go, and Sam will speak to the new investments in his remarks. In our utilities business, we have added $90 million of new growth projects to our capital projects backlog, and we're working on several other initiatives that should further expand it. One example of a project that we received approval for was at our Australian coal terminal, where we committed to a $20 million capital project to augment the facility's ability to manage storm water runoff during periods of heavy tropical rainfall. This capital investment, representing the first phase of the overall project, is expected to be commissioned into the terminal's rate base by the middle of 2015. We will also shortly commence further detailed engineering studies on the second phase of this project, which could require a further $50 million by 2016. Our Chilean transmission system also added $90 million to its capital backlog as a result of seven upgrade projects it was awarded as part of its 2014 trunk transmission line expansion plan. This system also grew its existing rate base by a further $90 million, as a result of an acquisition of a 133-kilometer line that is adjacent to its existing system. In our transport business, we have many projects that are on the go, with the most significant being the Serra de Cafezal expansion project, which consists of duplicating 30 kilometers of the Regis Bitencourt Highway in the state of Sao Paulo to ease congestion. We commenced work on this expansion during the quarter, and we expect that it will cost approximately $485 million, of which our share is approximately $150 million, which will be funded from cash retained in the business and project-level debt. We expect to be compensated for our investment through an increase in future toll rates, and we're targeting equity returns at the higher end of our long-term target threshold of 12 to 15%. In our energy business, across our various district heating and cooling systems, we made significant headway advancing a number of organic growth projects. We're making good progress connecting the Louisiana State University campus to our system in New Orleans. Also during the quarter, we reached an agreement to connect another major building to our system in Toronto and expect to complete a further five connections in Toronto by the end of the third quarter. With that, I'll turn the call over to Sam.
Great. Thank you, Bahir, and good morning, everyone. At the outset of the year, our goal was to invest approximately $500 million to $1 billion of capital into our various operations. We are in an excellent position to achieve this goal, as to date we've originated five new investments in the transport and energy sectors that total approximately $600 million. We'll be investing alongside institutional partners, drawing on our $1.8 billion of corporate liquidity to acquire 40% interest in each of these investments. We refer to each of these acquisitions in our letter to unit holders, but I wanted to mention two of them that we haven't talked about before. In February, agreements were signed to acquire a 50% equity stake in APMT's Elizabeth Container Terminal located in the port of New York, New Jersey. This transaction represents a compelling opportunity for us to enter the second busiest port market in North America by investing in a high-quality, long-life asset with upside from economic growth in the U.S. We expect this transaction to close in the second quarter of 2014, subject to obtaining all required consents and regulatory approvals. In April, definitive agreements were signed to acquire 100% of Macquarie District Energy and Seattle Steam. Macquarie District Energy owns district cooling systems in Chicago and Las Vegas, with a system in Chicago considered one of the highest quality facilities in the U.S. Seattle Steam provides heat to over 160 buildings in Seattle through 18 miles of distribution pipelines and operates two independent steam plants. These acquisitions are expected to close by the third quarter of 2014, again subject to obtaining all required consents and regulatory approvals. These systems complement our existing operations, which include systems in Toronto, Houston, and New Orleans, and are a continuation of our overall strategy of acquiring systems in urban locations where we believe we can utilize our overall platform to enhance the operations. I'm not going to be discussing our VLI acquisition in Brazil today, since I covered it on our last call, but I do want to provide our perspective on investing in emerging markets, since these markets have become topical over the last little while. In all the markets where we operate, we seek to acquire high-quality assets that we assume we will own for the long term, and ideally which we will buy at less than replacement cost. An indication of an appropriate time to invest is when capital becomes scarce. In order to make this strategy work, having the flexibility to invest in a number of sector and regions is key, as capital flows tend to be very fluid. We have historically invested in emerging markets such as Chile and Brazil because Brickwood has a long history in those markets, and we generally like the benefits of diversification that comes from investing in stable developed markets as well as higher growth emerging markets. More often these days than in the past number of years, we hear the viewpoint that exposure to emerging markets is a negative. For us, that suggests that the time is right to invest. But aside from current favorable investment conditions, we also focus on investing in these markets because it provides us with certain unique dynamics that are rarely available if we were solely focused on investing in developed countries. To start, we are always looking for investments of scale. However, they're not always available in the developed markets in all our targeted sectors. For instance, there are no toll road platforms of scale in the United States, Canada, or in the UK like we have in South America. As you recall, in 2012, we were able to acquire an interest in a world-class business that owns 9 key road arteries in Brazil, comprising approximately 3,200 kilometers of motorways. The ability to invest in the motorway sector in North America and the UK is limited because the regulatory framework and political will is not yet in place to introduce the private sector into the road infrastructure sector to the same degree as in South America. We're also focused on organic growth. Investing in markets of high growth and expanding infrastructure needs provides tremendous follow-on capital investment opportunities. As we've described on many prior occasions, a big value driver for our business is organic growth because it provides predictable, high-return sources of capital investment. Much of our organic growth comes from businesses such as Transelect, which translates electricity in Chile. Transelect benefits from the rapidly growing Chilean economy, which has grown at an average rate of approximately 5% per annum over the past 10 years. As most of the low-cost sources of energy are some distances from load centers, this expanding network provides an ability for us to deploy capital into new transmission lines year after year. We also try to invest on a contrarian basis. Emerging markets are, by their nature, more volatile, so enables us to invest on a contrarian basis when geopolitical events occur, as investors often paint all emerging markets with the same brush. Capital from the large money centers in North America and Europe often take risk-on, risk-off decisions that do not distinguish one emerging market from another. As a result, these windows of opportunity to invest on a contrarian basis tend to occur more frequently with emerging markets than they do in established markets. As we are long-term investors, we are not concerned about periods of short-term volatility and generally see them as excellent entry points to invest. However, investing in emerging markets is not simple and requires the extensive experience and platform that Brickwood has built. We only focus on those countries and states that, based on our experience and research, we believe has sufficiently reliable judiciaries and sound economic and regulatory policies. We don't always agree with every decision that governments in these countries make, but the same can be said of governments in developed nations. We also only focus on those sectors that we believe exhibit good barriers to entry and attractive investment attributes. Another key component to our investment philosophy is that we only invest significant capital if we have people on the ground. We recognize that we are in many cases investing in local businesses, which require the operating skill of executives with good local knowledge and relationships. Now, our interest in emerging markets should not be mistaken for a dislike of investing in developed markets, such as the United States, Canada, Australia, or the UK, because that's not the case at all. We remain very active in these markets. Nonetheless, the line separating developed markets from emerging ones can be very faint. For instance, one country that we've described as an emerging market, Chile, is in fact an OECD country with a AA- rating, the same as Japan and higher than many countries in Western Europe. We would argue that the risk of investing in Chile is in fact much lower than many Western European countries today. While we're seeking to grow our presence in certain emerging markets, currently less than 15% of our cash flow derives from non-OECD countries. In summary, our view is that the benefits of our exposure to emerging markets outweigh their challenges, and our ability to invest in them is a unique strength that should help us perform over the long run. I'm going to conclude my remarks with an outlook for our business. The business environment for Brookfield Infrastructure remains very favorable and should support continued solid results for our operations for the balance of the year. Earlier in the year, there was some volatility in the global currency and commodity markets, which was caused by uncertainty over the strength of the U.S. and Chinese economies. In spite of this, we experienced minimal impact on our businesses, as we are fortunate to own and operate a business today that is well diversified and, through our contractual and regulatory frameworks, generally insulated from these types of economic headwinds. Notwithstanding the resilience of our assets, we have also proactively set out over the past 2 years to reduce the financial risk in our business associated with foreign exchange and interest rates. From a currency perspective, we've hedged almost 80% of our non-US dollar denominated FFO for the next 2 years. And from an interest rate perspective, we've continued to extend the duration of our debt, and we've locked in almost 90% of our total debt into fixed rates. For the balance of the year, our primary focus is to execute our capital deployment strategy. We will endeavor to close the 5 transactions we have committed to and integrate these businesses into our operating platforms. These acquisitions will expand the scale of our transport and energy platforms and will meaningfully add to our cash flows in the second half of 2014 and beyond. We will also continue to operate our businesses efficiently and execute our organic growth plans. Finally, our business development teams are working diligently to convert our strong pipeline of opportunities into investments that will provide further profitable growth for our platforms. With that, I'd like to turn the call back to the operator to open the line for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. There will be a brief moment while we poll for questions. The first question is from Bert Powell of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Sam, just related to the energy business, obviously a good quarter on weather. Can you just give us a sense as to you know, how much of that, the circumstances that conspire to drive that performance in the quarter have abated, and maybe just kind of just generally give us an update on what you're thinking about that, or how you're thinking about that asset today.
Okay. Thanks, Bert. Let me start with the fact that, the extreme cold weather that we had this past year in North America obviously was a big driver for their performance in the quarter. The business generate significant cash flow when there is volatility in the natural gas prices, as this, you know, impacts basis spreads and, you know, given the nature of the business, you know, that's, you know, typically how we earn our revenues. You know, looking forward, you know, it's obviously hard to predict, you know, the balance of the year, but I would say, you know, over the you know, the next, you know, 12 months, and maybe I'll look at it from that perspective. You know, we think that you know, the way the market has evolved with, you know, the significant, in fact, record withdrawals that we had over the winter, that hit an all-time peak of about 3 TCF. You know, it will take either a very cool summer or, you know, significantly higher prices for there to be the levels of injections to get back up to normal storage levels for next winter. And so as a result, you know, we think that there's every potential that you could see significantly higher natural gas prices next winter. Is if, as we expect, you don't get those record injection levels. And as a result, you're going to see a lot more volatility. And in fact, we could see a lot of volatility this summer. And this is all positive for the business. So, you know, while, you know, I wouldn't want to speculate that, you know, there will be a, you know, a massive, you know, turnaround in this business overnight, I do think that, you know, it does feel like the sector has troughed, and that we should be seeing, you know, better results going forward. I mean, I know Bahir wanted to talk about seasonality, though.
Yeah, Bert, just to add to Sam's comments, also typically Q1 and Q4 are the strongest quarters for this business. So there is a bit of swing in the results that you'll notice in Q2 and Q3, just surely from a seasonality perspective.
Okay, thanks, Mihir. Thanks, Sam. Just in terms of the business development, I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. So you've got $600 million to go for 5 new investments. Two have closed. On the terminals, you have another terminal and the two district energies. Is that how to think about the 600?
No, we've had one that closed. It happened. It was two facilities, but it was one acquisition.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's MOL.
That was MOL. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's Tradeback.
Okay.
So there's five more to go. There's five still to close. If that's the question.
Yeah, there's five. Okay, there's five. So the 600 is for the additional five.
No, the 600 is for all six.
Also, okay.
And there's five to go, which is roughly $500 million.
Got it. Okay, thanks. Thanks for the clarification on that. And just on VLI, third quarter is when you expect to close that. Is that late third quarter, you think, or is that early on in the third quarter?
Our hope is early on in the third quarter, you know, but as you know, these things are sometimes hard to predict and, you know, very much out of our control. And particularly with Brazil and the World Cup coming up, I definitely wouldn't want to speculate.
Okay. And then just lastly, Bahir, the corporate costs had $6 million of other income, which is kind of a new thing, I guess. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, Bert, if you look at our liquidity table, we've got about $300 million of financial assets and cash that's sitting at the corporate level, which we, you know, about 2 quarters ago, we started investing in, you know, highly liquid marketable securities, you know, equity and debt instruments. So this is just the current yield portion of that financial asset program, comprised of realized gains of securities which you buy and sell, and then you know, distributions and income that you receive on your investment.
Okay. Thanks, Bahir.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Michael Goldberg of Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. EFH recently filed Chapter 11. Can you talk about the possibility that BIP might get involved in resolution of EFH? Does its size and complexity provide an advantage to BIP and BAM, as well as your ability to involve institutional co-investors? And what parts of EFH in particular might be of greatest interest?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for your question. So you're not going to like my first part of my answer, which is generally we don't comment on potential transactions. So as far as, you know, what parts might fit or how we might approach it, you know, it's a large deal, and I'm not even speculating that we're even involved, but even if we were, it's not something I really can get into. So I won't go there. You know, the one thing I will say is, you know, there's obviously lots of, it's a big company, there's lots of great components to it. The part that would fit best with us is the Encore subsidiary. That's a, you know, obviously world-class asset, and you know, if opportunities arose or we could buy that for value, you know, we would definitely look at that. But, you know, I think that's really all I can mention about that particular name.
Okay, thank you. I have one other one. How much would you expect the six organic investment initiatives to contribute to FFO when fully phased in? And similar question for year-to-date acquisitions.
Hi, Michael. It's Bahir. Maybe I'll start, and maybe Sam could add some comments. So if you look at the five acquisitions, they're comprised of transportation assets, so the VLI deal, and in addition to that, the two terminals in the West Coast and the terminal on the East Coast. Those generally transportation assets, given a ramp-up that we see in volume and a lot of the CapEx opportunities that we have to either modernize ports or the $6 billion CapEx program that we have at VLI, generally you'll start off in the high single-digit, low double-digit range, and then over time in the next 2 to 3, 4 years out, you tend to ramp up to sort of our desired range of 12 to 15%. So that's the answer on the transport. And then the district energy businesses, these are more utility type assets. So our going in FFO yield tends to be sort of in the also in the low double digits. But we'll ramp up quite quickly just with inflation indexation that we typically get on these contracts.
Thank you.
The next question is from Brendan Majorana of Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Sam, your comments on emerging markets, you know, if I just look at the deals that were done in the quarter, you know, other than VLI, which was talked about before, their North American deal. So was your comments kind of more related to what you're working on today, or was that commentary just more to kind of answer questions that you've been receiving from investors?
Yeah, I guess it's probably more the latter than the former. You know, we do have a number of we have a good pipeline in South America. You know, it was probably really arose out of some of the volatility early on in the quarter. It's probably dissipated more now, but we thought it was a good topic just to discuss. You know, we're trying to pick a few themes every year to just you know, give our perspective on. And, you know, I think we just wanted to reemphasize to our investors, you know, why we spend time focused on those markets and why despite some of the challenges, that arise in from operating in those markets, we think it's worth the effort and just a great positive for our company.
Yeah, no, it's helpful. It's a helpful commentary. And in terms of the follow-on CapEx, maybe this is for Bahir, but you mentioned at DBCT, I think you started an initiative there, and you've got some more at Transelec as well. So on the utility side, is there any pressure on the returns that you've gotten historically in comparison to what you're doing now in terms of those growth CapEx projects?
Hey, Brendan. I think with if you look at the CapEx projects that we spoke to in the letter, being the water project at DBCT and some of the contracts we've been winning, or mandates that we're winning, out of our Transelec business in Chile, and even some of the connections mandates we're winning in our UK distribution business. Across the board, we're seeing returns that are pretty consistent with what we've been earning in the past. So we're not seeing any pressures on that front.
Okay, and just from an investment capacity standpoint, you mentioned there's about $500 million kind of left to go on the few deals that you've got under agreement, and then your backlog is around $700 or $750 million. So that's a two-year backlog. So maybe for this year, it's about half of that, or about $350 million. You've got plenty of cash on the balance sheet. So, it sounds like there's a lot of investment activity that is out there. How much do you think you could kind of comfortably do on your current balance sheet before you need to think about maybe selling additional assets or raising equity capital?
Maybe I'll tackle that one. I think you were right to characterize the organic pipeline as something that we would execute over the next 2 or 3 years. There's usually around $300 million from the organic pipeline that we invest per year, and a significant portion of that we finance with CapEx lines down at those operations. And in addition to, in some cases, we have cash set aside for capital projects down at those levels. So from the corporate line, most of the capital that we use are on new acquisitions. I think, we have obviously the financial liquidity to, at this pace of investing, to get ourselves into next year. But as we will occasionally do, if there's opportunities to execute a very efficient transaction in the market in between now and then, we obviously might take advantage of that, just because we have pretty good visibility into our ability to deploy capital. So, I guess if your question is to ask is when we're thinking about doing another equity issuance, I can't really tell you that.
No, I mean it wasn't that. It was more just to think about the opportunity set maybe that's out there, and if there was a sizable, a reasonable size transaction that came up, maybe something in the order of $250 or $400 million or something like that. Is it, fair to assume that your balance sheet could handle that? I'm just kind of thinking about the corporate cash that you have on the balance sheet, which is a little over $400 million. You've got $500 million of acquisitions left to close. Let's say the growth CapEx gets funded at the business level, where you've got plenty of cash there. I'm just trying to get a sense of kind of order of magnitude of maybe how much capital you'd be comfortable deploying today with the balance sheet is where it stands. Because I would imagine it's more than the 500, but it's obviously not an infinite number.
Fair enough. So if we have, $1.8 billion of corporate liquidity today, and, $500 million of that spoken for, then I think generally we probably wouldn't want to take our lines lower than $400 to $500 million. So that gives an order of magnitude, I think, of our capacity.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
The next question is from Andrew Kusky of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. I guess the first question is really directed towards Sam. And overnight, we saw the deal from Horizon with Baosteel for Aquila Resources, with sort of a divide and conquer strategy, I guess, for resources assets and infrastructure assets in Australia. I'm just sort of curious on your appetite to align yourself with a mining company in that kind of approach. You know, obviously not specific on Aquila, just sort of more broadly. Is that the kind of thing that you would look to do to really hive off infrastructure assets that would really be non-core to a mining company?
Hi, Andrew. I think the short answer is absolutely. You know, I think we would be very prepared to take a creative approach to break up, let's say, a infrastructure heavy mining company and split it between infrastructure and mining operations and have a partner take the mining operations. I think the only difference between maybe the approach Horizon took on that transaction, and again, I only saw little bits of it overnight, so I just read what they were doing and got a bit of an update. But I think their approach is position themselves for future greenfield expansions that Aquila's operations might be undertaking, whereas our approach probably would be more focused on existing operations and brownfield assets.
So do you see Horizon just expanding in a bit of the port operations, which they really haven't had exposure before, and bulking up its already pretty extensive rail network is being a bit more competitive with your assets in Australia, or is it really this is just a one-off kind of scenario?
Look, I can't comment on their strategy, but we've seen them get involved in a number of new potential rail and port opportunities. You know, they were looking at a rail line and port project up just north of us in the Galilee Basin, and I think they were also looking at some other operations in the Pilbara. So they've been quite active in looking to build onto their business. I think some of it, you could say is competitive with us, some of it's not. I think, their interest has generally been on a lot of, new build situations where, that's something that we're not really that focused on. So I think they're taking a slightly different strategic approach than us, but, definitely they're a competitor of ours and they're very, very impressive company. It's got some great assets.
Okay, that's helpful. And I guess just switching geographies but staying in the Southern Hemisphere, your comments on broadly emerging markets but also more specifically Brazil, what are you seeing really from a capital allocation into that market? We look at a lot of external data points, and obviously the Bovespa's re-rated. It sold off dramatically. It's re-rated upwards. Some of the inflows that we see from the Brazilian data look to be positive, like money is coming back in. But it still seems pretty early from any kind of M&A in that market. Valuations still don't really seem overly stretched. So how do you think about that market just in the context of what we've seen in, say, the last 6 months and then the 12 months? And I guess the two timeframes would be a bit of a rebound and then the prior period really a pretty dramatic sell-off.
I wasn't quite sure what the question was, but I think you're just asking for my general comments on the market from an investment perspective. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I think the way you described it is right. There's there was a very steep sell-off, and I think the capital moved out of the market pretty quickly, and we saw the the Ray Ice pull back considerably, and it's since surprising to us strengthened a bit over the last couple of months. I say that the overall economic performance of the country is disappointing this year. I think we're hopeful that we will start to see a pickup now that the Ray Ice has weakened and makes some of the companies in the country more competitive. I'd say we think first from a foreign currency perspective, it's a much better entry point than it was a year or two ago. We have seen valuations pull back a bit, although as you rightly pointed, they've gotten a little more expensive in the last couple months. But I think we, as a whole, think it's an attractive place to invest. We aren't seeing nearly as many competitors for transactions as we did a couple years ago, although there may be a few more today than there was 6 months ago. But it's a market we're definitely focused on, and we've actually got a pretty robust pipeline of opportunities that we're looking at. So I think to answer your question briefly, the market is good for investors like ourselves, and I think that we can invest there on a bit of a contrarian basis because many people are predicting a longer term lower growth environment where we have a view that we'll see the economy rebound somewhat, and we have a more rosier outlook for the country than others do.
Okay, that's helpful. And if I just may ask one more related question in relation to Brazil, do you see any kind of interesting appetite for electric utilities? And ask the question in part, is the distribution companies are struggling right now with the high power pricing and really passing on that cost or really trying to hedge that cost. Is there any kind of interesting transaction that you could foresee with yourselves and Brookfield Renewable within that marketplace?
We've generally avoided distribution companies in Brazil just because it's the one part of the electricity sector where the government has taken a more, I'll say politely, proactive approach in influencing rates, and as a result, we think it's the one that's the riskiest from that perspective. But where we do like to invest is on the generation side, and so BREP has pursued a number of opportunities down there and continues to do so. And we like the transmission sector again, just because of the regulatory environment for that particular part of the of the business is less apt to attract government intervention.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
The next question is from Robert Kwan of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Just on the $600 million of acquisitions, I'm just wondering if you think you can add more leverage to those investments over and above whatever amounts of debt you're assuming?
Robert, I guess the each business when we acquire it, we put in an investment grade level of debt in each of the acquisitions. Sometimes we need to close with a bridge facility and then look to refinance it in short order. But we tend to within the first year or two size a long term appropriate level of debt, and so I think on some of them that is the case, and in others, and I think the ones that are probably underlevered in the short run would be the transport investments. But as they look to complete their expansion projects, which will largely finance with capital expenditure facilities, you know, you'll see those debt levels increase. So I think that as I thought through it, that was probably your question. Over time, you'll see the transport assets, those container port facilities and BOI, you know, slowly increase their debt levels to, you know, more normal longer term amounts.
Okay, so the other way to put it is out of the gate between cash and potentially as we go down the road, some amount of common equity, you want to basically finance the 600 with equity sources, but we could see the leverage increase over time as the CapEx build out basically becomes something closer to 100% debt.
So that 600 is financed with equity. So that is the equity component. And, you know, in a number of those businesses, there are, you know, opportunities to deploy significant amounts of capital, in particular BOI and TradePAC. And those expansion projects are going to be financed with debt at the operating levels.
Okay. Just turning to the Australian rail segment, that you're covered by the take or pays. I'm just wondering the volumes that you're moving right now. Are you moving any material volume, or just can you comment on where the volumes are versus the take or pay levels, either above or below, and how material it might be?
Generally, I think they're all moving volumes at or above their take or pay levels.
Okay. As you look at the outlook for your customers as production, do you see anything on the horizon that would materially may move those volumes up?
No, I don't see anything on the horizon that would move those up. I think, you know, generally most of our customers are, you know, fully ramped up and are looking to, you know, just, you know, reduce costs, because I think, you know, everyone, particularly as it relates to iron ore, people are expecting prices to drop, so they're all making sure they can, you know, maintain their margins as best as possible by reducing costs. You know, we have, you know, one customer who is probably operating at a bit of less than their rated capacity, but they've been supplementing their volumes on their contract by, you know, taking in some other people's iron ore, so they've managed to ship, you know, pretty close to their take or pay levels, and we'll see them, you know, continue to ramp up.
Okay. Just a last question here, kind of swinging back to NGPL. For the large several pipes that kind of move south to north, we've seen some increased contracting and some good optionality. And it seems like that has been progressively moving from the easternmost pipes to those more western, which your system is one of the most western out there. So I'm just wondering, do you think it's just a matter of time before you see a better kind of long-term economics on your system, potentially projects to move more volume either into the Chicago area or even further south into the Gulf? Is there another way to be thinking about how you see the recovery in the system over time?
No, I think you described it pretty well. Obviously, it's complicated and it's evolving, but there's definitely bottlenecks in the distribution of gas that's coming, or at least that's being produced out of the Marcellus, and so it's looking for a home. And as you know, REX has announced some open seasons to see if they can move gas west out of the Marcellus. And that creates, you know, I think good optionality, as you described it, to take advantage of that gas that's moving towards our direction and either take it north or south. You know, we have seen an increase in customers securing long-term contracts on our network, and so that's a positive trend. And you know, I think that the things we'll be, you know, watching and monitoring will be the whether or not there's any further approvals for LNG facilities down in the Gulf, and obviously those are ones that we would likely serve and would create great value for us. So, you know, to date, I think there's only been one that's been approved by FERC, but, you know, there are a number that have been submitted to them for approval, and if that takes place, that would be very, very positive.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Sam.
The next question is from Frederic Bastien of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just one for me. Do you continue to see better opportunities in the GDP-sensitive transport and energy segments right now, or are you also coming by some promising prospects in the utility segment?
Hi, Frederick. Look, I think it's safe to say that to achieve our target returns in the 12-15% range, there's far more of those opportunities in the transport energy sector than the utility sector. The utility sector is still, pretty frothy. I think, as people digest the great transaction that SNC did with the AltaLink, that will give you a sense of the valuations for that sector. And obviously that, there's two ways to look at that. Obviously that's a challenge for people like ourselves to focus on those types of assets when they trade at those prices. But on the positive side, it gives you a tremendous indication of the value of our own business, which I think in some respects is even better than what Buffett bought with AltaLink.
Great, thanks, Sam.
The next question is from Cherilyn Radbourne of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Good morning. Just one from me as well. I guess there have been a couple of recent auctions in Australia that have attracted some pretty high multiples. This is kind of related to the last question. Can you just give us a bit of perspective on competition for deals now versus 12 months ago and the kind of leverage that's being used and multiples being paid relative to sort of the peak years, 06, 07, 08?
Hi, Sherilyn. I guess we're hitting the two areas where we've seen significant valuation increases. One is in the utility sector, particularly North America, and then Australia just more broadly. The multiples for a number of those recent transactions have all been north of 25%. This is related to those port transactions and toll road transactions. They're not necessarily fueled by high levels of debt, although debt levels are higher than they have been over the last couple of years, but not, I wouldn't say they're anywhere near the level or the types of structures that we saw back in 2005, 6, and 7. So I guess that's a positive, but I guess there is more capital out there and equity capital that's prepared to accept lower returns or take a little bit more risk. As far as what that means for us, as we mentioned in our remarks, having that flexibility to invest in different sectors and in different regions is just a huge benefit to be able to avoid some of these cost of capital shootouts and find situations in other markets that just don't have that amount of capital flowing into them. And I think I'm very pleased with the fact that even in this environment where we're seeing those types of transactions, we've still been able to deploy already $600 million this year on what we think are good transactions that are lower risk and meet that hurdle that we set for ourselves.
And so just in terms of your pipeline, are you still having good luck originating, proprietary type of deals?
Yes, that is our focus. And, the way we do it, as we've described in the past, it's going out and building relationships and working with either owners of infrastructure assets or are people who are looking to buy infrastructure and who need an operating partner, and trying to convince them of, you know, the benefits of our skills over and above you know, just cost of capital. And so we're trying to obviously build our business and not just be the one who invests to earn the lowest return, but the one who can invest well and create value from a business once we've acquired it.
Thanks. That's all from me.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There are no more questions at this time. I will now hand the call back over to Mr. Sam Pollock for closing comments.
Great. Thank you, operator. We appreciate everyone's questions today and for everyone who were on the call. And we look forward to speaking with you again next quarter to review our progress.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.